ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hey there, Sana Qadar here from All in the Mind. Check out our new series, Forensic. It's all about the psychological tools and tricks that come with investigating crime.
He was setting the bombs off in subways, in the New York Public Library, in movie theaters.
When you're testifying in court, rather than having purely your own memory, you take on all these little bits and pieces of information from different sources.
All in the Mind, Forensic. Search for All in the Mind on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
A video game dropped last week. It's made in Melbourne, and it has absolutely no business making grown adults feel the way it is making them feel. It's called Mixtape. It's set in the 90s, and it has burned CDs and riding in shopping trolleys, and that feeling of the last day of school with nowhere to be and nothing tracking you. Why today, in 2026, does that particular world feel so far away it might as well be ancient history? And why can't we stop looking back at it, especially through the lens of technology? My name is Ray Johnston, and welcome to Download This Show on ABC Radio National. Now joining me to unpack some of the biggest stories in tech right now is Mark Serrells, editorial director at Choice and co-founder of Continue magazine. Welcome back, Mark.
Hello.
And Phoebe Toops-Dugas, who is the trans gamer professor. Welcome back, Phoebe.
Thank you, Ray.
Now, Mixtape, video game made by a Melbourne studio, has turned out to be incredibly emotional for anyone old enough to remember when logging off was a thing that your friends actually did. It's getting rave reviews, making a lot of people feel things they were not really expecting to feel, maybe, about the 90s and also our relationship with technology. So I wanted to know from both of you, first of all, have you played it yet, Phoebe?
Yeah, I picked it up on the train, so about 30 minutes in, and it's super fun. Very nostalgic. I'm like, oh yeah, I remember doing these things. Not the riding the shopping cart down a hill in the dark, but a few of the things.
Yeah, I absolutely do have that memory. So, Mark, have you played Mixtape?
Yeah, I've played a bunch of it. Was inspired to play it by, you know, the heated discourse online, you know, people loving it, people being frustrated by it. I'm typically a hater of things. I hate things. I hate movies. I hate that. But I was surprised to find myself really not hating it.
What was it about it that you didn't hate?
Oh, man. I think the art style, the aesthetic, the fact that we're making a game like this, yeah. I think is really unique. You know, like it's not about, you know, shooting things or punching things. Really unique story driven. I love those types of games in general. Also, the fact that it's short. Yeah. I love a short game.
As an adult, they have nailed their target market of people who remember the 90s and don't have time to play video games here. Now, for anyone listening who hasn't had a chance to pick up Mixtape or doesn't know anything about it, you are three friends. It's the last day of school. There's a big party planned and there's a whole lot of adventures that stand between you and this party. And it is all set to the background of this soundtrack, this mixtape that the main character has created, who has curated the perfect song for every moment. And no spoilers, but sometimes that is derailed a little bit. And I think there's nothing like music to really hit you in the nostalgia feels, especially when it comes to games. And there is some deep cuts in this game that I did not expect to hear. It's not the standard soundtrack of the early 90s that you would anticipate. But it did make me wonder, though, you know, why is nostalgia for this specific era? I understand why I have it, because it was my teenage years. But the 90s, pre-smartphone 90s, why is it hitting so hard right now? Because it's not just those of us who lived through it. It seems to be reviving for everyone.
I think this game isn't just designed to evoke a certain period of time. I think it's designed to evoke nostalgia itself. It's actually a game about nostalgia. It's not just about feeling nostalgic for a certain era. You know, when I was playing it, I kept thinking about the TV show Sex Education, which I love, but I still don't know when that TV show is set. So if you watch that TV show, the cars look like they're from the 70s, but they all have iPhones. You know, it's just a very weird space. I feel the same way about mixtape. I don't necessarily think it's not about the 90s. It's not about going back to the 90s. It's about what it felt like to be a teenager and letting go of that certain parts of your life and moving away from friends. It's about that feeling where you didn't have that many responsibilities and you could just spend the whole day messing around trying to go to a party. So I think it's more about that than the 90s itself. That's my read of it. I don't know if you guys feel differently.
I think my read of it is always going to be through those clues that you do pick up by the technology that's being used.
Yeah.
So, you know, the burned CDs,
yes,
and, you know, even just the
CRT
way
monitors.
That, right? Yeah, you look for the monitors.
Everywhere.
When was this?
Yeah.
But I'm curious, yeah, are we stuck in a bit of an 80s and 90s nostalgia loop in a way? I'm thinking of series like, you know, Stranger Things and Yellow Jackets was super cool 90s set TV show. Is there something genuinely new happening with how this period is being remembered? Or is this just what's bound to happen, Phoebe?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of people of the right age are sort of the people making media, and maybe a little bit of it too is, you know, that time period was a time when a lot of really iconic media was created and when it could be distributed. So people would, you know, because you'd go rent a video, you could see it, not just when it was in the theaters. But I also feel like there's maybe a little piece of trying to capture the nostalgia, but maybe be a little more inclusive and a little more diverse, because a lot of those movies don't stand up. There's a lot of really toxic jokes that come out and stuff, right? And so I don't know. I see it a little bit as maybe a little bit of reimagining that time period by kind of the people making media at this point.
Do you think as well that this is a bit of a nostalgia for owning things? You know, cassettes, burned CDs, physical media. This is a world before subscriptions, you know, before you had your entire digital game collection ripped away from you because you didn't pay your monthly fee. Is that different from regular childhood nostalgia, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, the last time we were here, we talked about how stars are wearing, they're not wearing earpods anymore. They're wearing headphones that actually connect with a headphone jack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're our nostalgia correspondent.
That's
sorry,
right,
Matt.
Man.
The old man is here.
I'm here. I also think we're struggling right now with the death of monoculture, right? Like, everything's fragmented. We're all retreating to our own little spaces online, I think. In the 90s and 2000s, to a certain extent, were those last decades where, you know, you could watch MTV and figure out what was happening and what you should be listening to and what you should be dressing like. I think nowadays that's a bit more challenging, a bit more difficult, just because of the way everything's fragmented. So maybe there's a nostalgia for the monoculture.
Yeah, I don't know that it's necessarily better, but it was maybe easier to sort of understand what everyone else was up to and kind of where you might fit in and what, you know, we had all the different cliques and such, right? The goths and the jocks and all of these things that harken back to Ferris Bueller.
And it's so funny because my son will ask me, you know, did that really exist, Mum? I'm like, absolutely, it really did.
100%.
You know, everyone did have their little pockets, their little cultural pockets. And I'm not sure if that's been mostly flattened today because it's been a long time since I've hung out in a high school.
I don't think so, because I've got a kid in high school and he's very much a jock, which is disappointing me. So I've got a little jock and he thinks he's cool. So that's still alive and well, for sure.
Oh, thanks for letting me know.
Mine's a nerd, so she's got her
fantastic
little crew of fantasy nerd kids. So.
Oh, lovely. Yeah, mine's a tech nerd, so, you know, what hope did he have? I think it's impossible for me to think about nostalgia at the moment without thinking about all of those awful AI-generated videos that are flooding the internet, romanticising specifically the 90s and this idea of what the 90s was like. And I think when it comes to internet culture as well and how it was in the 90s, do you think that there's a risk that nostalgia culture will start romanticizing an internet that was also chaotic and exclusionary and awful in its own ways. We just seem to maybe forget how bad it was.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I think you're spot on. I think the internet in the 90s, and the 90s is a decade, I didn't love it. I had to listen to Oasis and Blur. And, you know what I mean?
Just, I want to hear Wonderwall for the 800th time on the radio.
Yeah, I think there is a tendency to look back and think things were better and forget the progress that's been made in a lot of different ways. The 90s was a rough time, you know, like for minorities especially. I mm-hmm. think one of the things that people are a little bit disappointed in mixtape is it sugarcoating a bit too much? I saw a tweet online that says like, oh, what if they made a game for white people? That's mixtape. you know, so I think some of those...
There is a distinct lack of racial diversity within...
Yeah,
within
and I think that's worth discussing as well. I think it's a beautiful game and I love the game, but those concerns are valid too. And I think it's also reflective of what the 90s was like.
Yeah.
Although, or at least what the dominant media culture of the 90s was like, for sure.
You are listening to Download This Show on ABC Radio National. Ray Johnston here with you, and I'm joined by Phoebe Toopstugas, who is the Trans Gamer Professor, and Mark Serrells, Editorial Director at Choice and co-founder of Continue Magazine. And speaking of the internet, it did used to sound like millions of people yelling over each other in different fonts with terrible spelling, mostly on a black background with green text. Now,
don't forget Blink.
half the web now, though, is starting to read like it was written by the same polite corporate ghost that wants to circle back on your feelings. There was a piece this week from tech publication 404 Media. Shout out to 404 Media. They do incredible work. They put a name to something that a lot of people have been feeling. You know, that navigating an AI-saturated internet has become genuinely exhausting. With your brain just running a background check on everything you're reading all the time. Now, Mark, you are someone I know is very passionate about good writing. Why are we getting so good at spotting AI writing, even when we can't explain how? What's going
on? Oh, man, I think it's just, what do you call that effect when the eyes don't look good in a drawing? What's it called again?
Like Uncanny Valley.
It's the Uncanny Valley for writing, you know? I think that's what it is. And I've found that it's impacted how I write as well. So, like, because people are like, if you use an M-dash, that's AI.
But they got those from us.
Yeah, that's it. But now I'm like, I love using M-dashes. Now I can't. No. So now I don't
use
M-dashes as much, so. Right? So, and also, there's all these little telltale signs, right? And I think visually as well, as it becomes more sophisticated, I'm starting to see little things, tiny little things, like it's too much reflection or it's too much of that. It used to be six fingers, but now they've got good at fingers. Your brain is training itself to spot the other little telltale signs. It is exhausting, though. I think that's spot on. It's like trying to read the micro expressions on a Zoom call or something. You're just like staring in it, like, come on, are they upset at me?
Yeah, for me, a bunch of it ends up being like the length, paragraph after paragraph after paragraph. Am I actually deriving value from reading this? Or is it like, where is the information I need? You know, half my job is reading papers, right? And I read those thoroughly. And then I get to the internet and it's just like, okay, I already know what the buildup needs to be. Just tell me the thing. Yeah. Stop just word vomit.
I've got a bit of a theory as well. You know, even though people insist that they are still staying as the human in the loop, as we constantly hear about, I'm checking the output. What is being generated is so mind-numbingly boring and repetitive. I don't think even the people that are generating the output can get through what they have generated. I think they're starting to read it and just tuning out. So it's not actually being edited into something useful or less flowery. It just is being put out into the world in this way.
It's killing me. especially at work. So like, I think the other day there, I had to read this paper that was sent by someone who wanted to change the cleaners at Choice. There's like a 1500 word essay about why we should change the cleaners. It's because of ChatGPT. I'll just chuck it into ChatGPT. It's 1500 words long. So not only I'll just chuck that into ChatGPT and get it to summarize it for me.
Right.
So it's like, it's just, there's humans at other end trying to figure out how to parse thousands of words of complete garbage. It's just crazy.
Gosh. So
crazy situation.
There were researchers that found that AI is tending to reflect what they call WHELM perspectives, mm-hmm. which is a great acronym, Western high-income educated yes. liberal mm-hmm. male. So what cultural viewpoints are getting flattened or erased when that becomes the default voice of the internet, when everyone sounds like that? Who aren't we hearing?
Well, I've got one point about this. Sorry, I'll stop talking after this. At Choice, we just
with your WHELM perspective.
With my WHELM perspective. So I have, like, at Choice, this is a really serious thing because the banks, for example, are chucking, for example, if you want to go for a loan, they'll chuck mm-hmm. it into AI and AI will decide whether or not you get the loan mm-hmm. or not. Because we've had, historically, women have found it harder to get business loans, for example. AI exacerbates that because it's using all the decisions and all that data from the past, which is already biased. So what mm-hmm. AI does with things like this is it actually exacerbates bias because it takes the bias from the past and it applies it to whole new things, which it then absorbs and then applies and applies and applies. So what actually happens is the biases scale as the more it's used. So it's actually quite dangerous.
So it's getting worse and worse and worse.
Correct.
Yeah, if I can plug my friend's book,
please
which is really enlightening and a quick read actually. Disabling Intelligences: The History of Eugenics and How We're All Wrong About AI. And it very specifically calls out. Yeah, it's maybe not a light read, but it's not a long read, and it is very accessible. But yeah, it explains very clearly how all of these biases come about. And then, yeah, when you start using it, not just for loans, but for healthcare decisions.
Mm. Yeah.
Right? And who should get access to healthcare, for example?
So, how does the internet that we're looking at today, though, like, how does it compare to the old internet without the risk here of going down a nostalgia, rose-colored glasses rabbit hole? Like, you know, I'm remembering a time when, yeah, there were forums and fan communities just developing, you know, the specific personalities, in jokes that you needed to be a part of to understand. Mm-hmm. Yeah, are we at risk of losing that as everyone becomes so concerned about whether or not their words are polished enough that they're feeding it through the same text generator machines?
Right.
I was thinking about this in the context of the social media ban. I think a lot of people were arguing the social media ban's a bad idea because when I was a teenager, I found my people online. I went to all these different subgroups. I went to these different platforms and I found my people on the internet. How the hell are you going to find your people on the internet now?
Oh,
it's mm-hmm. going to be, it's so much harder. You're on three websites, basically. You're at the mercy of algorithms that are trying to harvest every single second of your attention with complete trash, garbage content. You're not finding your people on the internet now. So we bring it back to nostalgia. I'm quite nostalgic for the internet where I could find my people. And I think that's dying now at the mercy of corporations and mm-hmm. AI slop and vertical video.
All right. So how do we escape from this? Because I'm losing my mind. What do we do to get away from this kind of writing? Do I just need to delete my LinkedIn again?
Yeah, delete LinkedIn first and foremost. Yep. Nuke it from space. I think support good writing, support authentic writing. Mm-hmm. I think it's harder and harder to find that stuff. But if you see it and it's asking you for $3 a month to support it, just do it. How much do you spend on coffee? How much do you spend? I drink 6 cans of Coke Zero a day. I'm a freak. I'm an absolute freak. That's $20 a day. So I can afford to support a website every now and then.
You could have a whole writer on staff creating stuff for you, then, right?
But I'd have to give up Coke Zero, so that's not going to happen.
Phoebe, do you have any advice to escape this situation we find ourselves in?
I mean, shout out to all queer creators out there who are, you know, still making things. I mean, there are many non-queer ones as well, but, you know, those are the voices too. I mean, among others who are getting erased by all of this. It's all getting, you know, straightenified.
100%.
So.
It's all being whelmed.
All being whelmed.
You are listening to Download This Show on ABC Radio National. Ray Johnston here with you. I'm joined by Mark Serrells, who is the editorial director at Choice and also the co-founder of Continue magazine, and Phoebe Toopstugas, who is the trans gamer professor. Now, Australia has looked at Polymarket watched people betting crypto on elections and celebrity breakups and said, mate, that is gambling. So we've added it to the national blacklist of blocked websites alongside nearly 1,300 other platforms. On the other side of the world, though, I'm looking at the US and they treat these prediction markets like serious financial infrastructure. They've got CNN, CNBC, Dow Jones, Yahoo Finance. They're all signing deals to put live odds directly into news coverage, which is just straight up dystopian sci-fi stuff. Mm-hmm. So let's go back to the beginning here. For those who have no idea what I'm talking about, what exactly is a prediction market? How does Polymarket work, Mark? I know you have crypto.
Oh, I mean, I do have, I have a tiny amount of crypto that I forgot about.
How much is your Bitcoin worth now?
I've no idea. I haven't checked it in a long time. Yeah, what is Polymarket? I mean, it's gambling. It's so crazy that the US doesn't think that it's gambling. It's gambling on real world things, the most minor crazy things you can imagine. There's even reports, you know, people in the US, like in government, who are using these insights to play the markets and make money on these markets based on like world events, right? Is America going to send a nuclear bomb to Iran, or are they going to drop bombs here, or these like fundamental world changing events?
And these are real bets that people are placing 100%. As well, which Absolutely. Is just horrific.
Yeah. I think it's part of this broader, bizarre move towards putting gambling into absolutely every element, every facet of our lives. If you've ever watched a sporting event recently, it's really depressing how prevalent gambling is in every single part of it.
Yeah, I think the sort of creepy part too is like it's not gambling on things that are completely neutral, right? It is gambling on things that people in power with money, with access to legitimate financial institutions could have some control over. It's more power for the people with the power in many ways.
I've seen politicians intentionally cut speeches short because there were bets on how long the speeches would go for.
What?
Things like that occurring, which is just bizarre to me. And there's no way that I could imagine that anyone could see it as anything other than gambling. But is this decision that this is gambling and it being banned here, is that actually going to protect us? Can we use a VPN to get around it? You know, what's going to ultimately end up happening here? Are we going to end up like the US, betting on how long Albo's next speech goes for?
I mean, geo-blocks only get you so far. So, yeah, presumably you can VPN around it.
No, we shouldn't tell the people that then.
Don't, please. Seriously.
I hate being a devil's advocate, but I do need to ask, is there a legitimate argument for what these platforms are building? Are they bringing any good into the world?
I think no. I think gambling is dangerous. I think I don't mind people having a bit of fun gambling on stuff. I think at a fundamental level, even playing in the stock market is gambling. So I think that's where the lines get a bit blurred, right?
Let's leave the horrors behind. I would love to hear about some tech that's brought you joy this week, Phoebe.
Yeah, I just bought some nice little microphones, little Rode Micro microphones, because my next step with as the trans gamer professor is to start making YouTube videos. So yeah, it's, you know, they're like the size of a little AirPod case, and they're, I don't know, they're so cute, and I've been showing them to everybody. I haven't gotten to actually use them yet. Next week.
I adore that microphone tech has gotten to the point where we can have a little case. It really is
so cool.
Not much larger than an AirPods case. Mm-hmm. You can just carry it around in your bag with the rest of your tech and then pull it out and have an interview on the fly wherever
Absolutely.
You are. That's lovely. I have also a lot of joy for your purchase there, Phoebe. I'm very happy for you. Mark, tell me about some tech that's brought you joy this week.
Mine's just pretty embarrassing. My son had been hassling me for a long time to buy an e-scooter, and I've said no, I said no, I said no. But then in the holidays, he started a bin washing business and made enough money to buy himself an e-scooter.
Oh, how can you say no?
So I eventually was like, yep, sure, even though it's illegal, even though you're probably not... You're probably going to kill yourself on this thing. Let's go. Let's buy one. But he got one And I love it, man.
You love it?
I
have
love
you been
it
riding it?
All the time, bro.
So what are the rules at the moment? Are you allowed to ride it on the footpath, on the road? What have you got to do?
I don't know. I'm crazy. I'm not even wearing a helmet with this thing. I'm going to kill myself. Because my head's
that's
too big for
helmets. That's that 90s nostalgia.
That's that 90s nostalgia. But I'll be driving to the store to get a Coke Zero, just zipping it.
Mark Serrells, thank you so much for coming on Download the Show. Where can people find you and your work?
Blue Sky. Don't go to LinkedIn because I'm going to nuke it after this. continuemagazine.com. Check it out.
And Phoebe Toopstugis, where can people find you and your work?
Yeah, so I have a new website at transgamer.prof, and that is also my new Blue Sky tag. So
fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on Download. Great to have you again.
Absolutely.
Go enjoy your joyful tech, friends. Have a great time.
Thank you. You too.
And now some more tech news from the week that was. In case you missed it, the Australian federal government has announced in its budget on Tuesday that it will use artificial intelligence across dozens of agencies to handle tasks like assessing medicines and catching tax fraud. The budget also includes a $70 million AI accelerator program to fund research. Sam Altman, the CEO of OpenAI, the company behind ChatGPT, holds more than $2 billion in companies that have done business with OpenAI. That's according to documents filed in Elon Musk's lawsuit against Altman. Musk is seeking $150 billion in damages and wants Altman removed as CEO, alleging self-dealing and breach of charitable trust. Altman says he recused himself from relevant decisions and has rejected all of Musk's claims. And in New South Wales, we're rolling out a digital ID system through Service New South Wales, where residents take a selfie matched against a government-issued document to verify who we are. Sign-up is optional and the selfie is deleted immediately after verification, though the system does cross-check your details against multiple federal government databases behind the scenes. The first practical use of the technology is linking a toll account online to claim a rebate, which is a modest starting point. Now, Mark mentioned wired headphones earlier in today's conversation. We had him on a previous episode talking about the rather large jump in wired headphone sales. I have here a lovely email from one of our listeners on the topic that we just had to share. So Stuart emailed, "I am the reason why wired headphones and microphones have jumped so much, maybe. I'm an influencer. I get dialysis, and because of paralysis in one arm, I can't move either arm. To be honest, some Bluetooth earbuds make it hard to pair, especially if you have to touch two tiny buttons at once with sausage fingers one-handed, without them scooting around the table also. This can be contrasted with plugging in a 3.5mm jack or a USB-C plug. So easy, so simple with wired. The only downside is the wires can get tangled with a blood or oxygen line, annoying the nurses a bit. And I woke up once completely tangled in all sorts of wires. So the six different wired headsets I've bought over 6 months have caused this worldwide trend. I believe it. Don't burst my bubble. Thank you." I'm not going to burst your bubble, Stuart, and I appreciate your email. If you want to get in touch, download the show at abc.net.au is our email, or you can slide into my DMs on Instagram at Ray Johnston. I am Ray Johnston, and you've been listening to Download the Show on ABC Radio National.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.